Welcome back to the pod, everybody. We've got a great one for you today with our guest, Nicholas Magalis. And Nicholas and I are actually going on tour. San Francisco, Sacramento, Portland, Seattle, and Salt Lake City. I'll be with Nicholas Magalis starting February 21st, ending the 26th. Go to nicholasmagalisisnotfunny.com for tickets or click the link in the description of this pod. You're about to hear a great episode and actually an exclusive of the first time Nick is talking about his new music. And we're going to play his new music also towards the end. But if you don't want to wait until the end, pause this right now and Spotify Nicholas Magalis, Telepathy. That's his new single, y'all. Check it out. Without further ado, let's get to the episode. Enjoy it.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Welcome back to the pod. Today, well, first of all, what's up, Brandon?
Hey, what's up, Ryan? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
How many times did you get cancer this week?
Four.
Four, huh? Yeah. Have you gotten the results yet?
Yeah, all of them just stopped returning my calls, all the doctors.
Yeah.
They just said, please stop calling us. But yeah, other than that, it's pretty sweet.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, my week was pretty good too.
What did you do?
I did 137,000 open mics to prepare for a show this past Friday at the Comedy Store.
Mm.
I had some industry people watching me.
Mm.
I did well. Did very well.
Nice.
And I was hoping these industry peeps would be like, amazing, you're signed. But they were like, great job, we want to see more.
Ooh.
So I was like, oh.
You're expecting like the equivalent of a record deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
From an open mic. Does that ever happen?
It's not an open mic.
You just said open mic?
I did 1,000 open mics to prep for an actual show.
Oh, got it. Okay.
That happened to me in the Vine days. I did a Vine show as a character. And then afterwards, some... Suit from Levity.
Mm.
Levity Live's like, hey, I'm Bert Kreischer's manager. I just saw you. I'd like to have a meeting with you. And I was like, oh my God, Hollywood.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I find it so interesting that like we've been talking for a minute and a half and pretending like Nick's not here. It's just so like
that's actually common. We're reviewing our weeks.
Oh, okay.
Then we'll
address Nick.
This is the format, guys. Stick to the format.
Okay, you got it. It's fine.
I told a Vine story.
Mm-hmm.
Had you not rudely interrupted my my amazing transition. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
I'm transitioning into a woman. For now, my pronoun is him, her. I know it's confusing.
Okay. Yeah.
But you better respect
it.
No,
you're transitioning into a stand-up comedian.
Oh, yes.
There you go. From Vine to a stand-up comedian.
And lo and behold, we have... a former Viner, just like us.
Yes.
Who is doing the same thing.
He's transitioning.
Into a woman. Welcome our guest. Wait, first, what's your pronoun? What are your pronouns?
I guess I just go by Nicholas Magalis.
All right. Welcome, Nicholas Magalis.
I'm a Nicholas. You know, you're transitioning into being funny now. What are you doing?
Whoa!
I'm paraphrasing. What did you say?
That was insulting.
You're gonna become funny now. You're working on a.
Oh my God, that's insulting. No, we're transitioning. We were talking before the podcast, transitioning from social media to
live entertainment.
So why did I get showered for this? If this is a podcast, why did I took care of myself? Oh, there's a camera.
There's a camera.
Do you usually not shower? What do you mean? You seem like somebody that showers a lot.
Yeah, I shower enough.
Enough.
I mean enough.
How many times a week?
How would I? You know what I mean.
Once a day.
Metrics for that. I don't know. Oh yeah, once a day.
Once a day. Once a day, okay.
Once a day at the end of the day.
Mm.
I'm not a morning shower guy.
I like showering at night, too, because you go in bed and you're nice and clean.
Yeah, but you know what? You go in bed and then you're soaked. The bed is soaked.
Well, I
use the bed as a towel.
I think that's where you're going wrong.
Kind of just get into the bed and roll around.
Just buy some towels. Bed Bath & Beyond, they're like $5.
Hey, man. If anybody listening wants to gift me some towels, I've been seeing Rye doing this lately, where he goes on Twitter and goes, "Hey, anybody have any Starbucks gift cards?"
Yeah,
you just ask your followers for things.
It's a means of promoting myself.
I like how he frames it like it's a joke.
Yeah,
and he's like, "Wouldn't it be ridiculous if you guys gave me Starbucks gift cards?" But anyway, please.
Yeah,
really the gift cards.
Frappuccino.
Nick and I are doing some shows together, which we'll get into, but he'll like tag, like, here are the dates, and then I'll quote it and say, I'm also accepting donations. It's a joke, but I really will take gift cards.
Really? Only Starbucks gift cards or like any other gift card?
Walmart? Chipotle. We're going to be on the road, so it might be hard, kind of hard to find a Chipotle, but Starbucks on the side of the highways.
Chipotle has good coverage.
Yeah.
They're national. They're
Chipotle's like Mexican Starbucks.
I use are we talking like cell service coverage? Hey, I'm a comedian. Thanks.
That was really good. I can't wait for your live
Welcome
show.
Welcome to the podcast. It's comedy and it's laughs.
So you guys are trying to be funny now? What are you doing?
I'm confused what's happening. So wait, so the live show.
Wait. Let's give some background to Nicholas. Sorry to just okay. shushy right now.
I shushed you. It's okay. A shush for a shush.
Nicholas Megalis. For those of you listening might know him from Vine. But if you're one of Brandon's fans, you're 12 and you don't even know what Vine is. Nicholas, can you tell us some background on who the hell you are? You can even start from before Vine.
I don't remember really where any of it begins, because it begins every day. You know what
Whoa,
I mean?
That's deep, bro.
Well, it does. Nice. It begins every day. I'm in a new life now than I was even then. I was just talking to this gentleman before we started. You know how you guys, don't you feel that you're a different person almost than you were when we started?
Yes.
When we were on Vine, it was this serendipitous, weird, my life got hijacked by my obsession with Vine. Like, it derailed my life.
Yeah, same here, big time.
Because I thought that I was going to be a singer-songwriter playing, you know, piano and playing clubs and doing, you know, terrestrial sort of normal career route. Like, hey, guys, come see me at the Delancey. I'm playing Friday night. Tickets are $5. Please come, you know. And I was failing at it hard failing at it. Because I moved to New York City. You guys don't care about this shit.
Yeah,
no, we're listening.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I know you're listening to me, but maybe you're just listening, like, and in your head, he's like, I want a panini wrap with extra tomato.
No, I do want a panini wrap, but I'm also listening.
What's a panini wrap? What is that?
Let's talk about that. Wait, hold on. For audience members, I'll just give you a quick summary.
I'm so sorry.
Nicholas Megalis was one of the most popular, most followed people on Vine. You might know his hit jingle, Gummy Money.
Insert the clip
here.
Sure,
here it is.
Yo, my name is Nicholas, and this is ridiculous. Got mad gummy money, and it is deliciousness.
Boom. Do you know that Vine? I do. So Nicholas found sudden, large success that also came with weird fame. That Brandon, it's the same, so similar as Brandon and me. All of a sudden, we had shitloads of people watching us. And then Nicholas was like, but wait, I'm a musician. Now I'm this Vine boy. And I think
what was funny about...
Did I just do a terrible job explaining
no,
that?
No, no.
Okay.
It always makes me laugh when people message me and go, holy shit, man, I didn't know that you made music or you're a musician. Mm. And I'm like, I made 800 Vines and all of them are music. almost every single one of them is a mini compact jingle, clearly made, in my opinion, by somebody with some sort of background in music or you're writing music in some way. So I had to sort of go the back door, the back route of whatever this is, whatever success means to me. I'm redefining what success means to me. And when Vine started, I was like, I need to be everywhere. I want my picture everywhere. I want to be on magazines. I don't care what it's for. They'll discover my music. They'll peripherally discover my music.
Right. Mm.
I don't care. I'll get famous. I want to be everywhere. I don't want to be able to walk down the street without somebody knowing. And then once that happens, when it's out of your control, then you kind of reel it in and go like, I don't know if this is what I want. I don't know if I want that. I kind of like the Gorillaz, the band The Gorillaz, because no one really knows what they look like. Many people don't even know that that's Damon Albarn from Blur. Most people don't even know that that's the singer of Blur.
I didn't know that.
And he could still get coffee. You know, he can walk around L.A. Like, I don't ever want to be, you know, Coldplay guy. Like, I don't want to be... Well,
some people know him, Coldplay guy.
Coldplay guy, Chris Martin. But you know, I've never had that level of success, I guess. But what is success? What the fuck is success?
So you,
you know, what does it mean? I'm asking you guys. This isn't rhetorical. Like, well, what the hell? What is success?
There's financial success, which sure. is tangible. You can say, oh, this much money, that amount of success.
I think that that's what matters most to me. And a lot of artists are afraid to say that, that I want to be financially successful. I'm not afraid of that at all. I need money to propagate my vision. I need money to, I need money like I need gasoline to keep it running.
Right.
I need to keep this running, whatever the hell this is.
Yeah.
So that's why people need to buy music again. Please, guys.
And we were, I was
talking. Please. Come on. It's great. Sounds good.
And you
can dance to it.
You can even stream Nick's music on Spotify for free. But guess what? Nick will get a little. Couple cents per stream,
and that's cool. That's fine with me. I because brands are involved. I've worked with brands. Like, think about it. Spotify is just a brand in a way. You know, it's just
yeah.
So it's like, you know, there's ads. You're getting money from brands. There's ads that pop up. So it's like, as long as somebody is footing some kind of bill for me to be able to get out of bed and leave my 2-year-old daughter at home while I go make rock and roll
by yourself, right?
No.
Oh.
Ryan, please.
Oh, my bad.
No, my wonderful wife, my wonderful, amazing wife, who is my creative partner on pretty much everything I do.
Yeah, she's great.
Has been for years now.
Yep.
She's most of what you see is probably my wife's facilitating. My wife helps me with everything pretty much.
You're like Jim Gaffigan and his wife, although you didn't cheat on her, and that's not the reason why you credit her.
He cheated on his wife?
Allegedly. I don't want to get into it.
I don't know anything about it.
Mm. I'm just kidding.
Jim Gaffigan, make us laugh again. He's funny.
Pop-Tarts.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah, the Pop-Tarts guy cheated on his wife? Never would have guessed it.
I'm kidding. So, Nick.
So, talk to me.
Nick, you are a musician, touring musician with rock bands for years and years. Just doing it. You were doing it. You got further in music than I was, and I was failing at music, too. Then you got millions and millions of followers on Vine, all of a sudden making money through brand deals, and then all of a sudden you're just this social media boy. Mm. Take us from there. Did it make you sad?
Well, I mean, I wasn't a complete failure before Vine. I think, I don't know what that means. I don't know. Maybe I was a failure.
Saying you were failing hard.
Well, I mean, I was failing hard during that period, those couple of years. I just moved to New York. So it's like New York, I was there for a couple of years, and I was like, you know, when you move to New York or L.A., you don't know I was coming from Ohio. You think that you're the best.
Yeah.
You're like, of course this is going to work. I'm the greatest. This is only New York City. There's not many people here. Yeah. And then you show up and you have a cool hat on and, you know, you've worked on a look for 12 hours and you step out of your apartment and you're like, oh, there's a line down the block of guys who are cooler, more interesting, better looking, more talented. All the things that you pit yourself against, that your ego struggles with, is mm-hmm. right there in front of you for the taking in New York City. So New York City crushed me a little bit because I was like a big fish, little pond guy. I was really successful in Cleveland.
Really? Nice.
Absolutely,
dude.
Yeah. I played an arena before I moved from Cleveland. We played Quicken Loans Arena with Nine Inch Nails before I moved. And then I moved to New York City, and I'm like, well, of course this shit's going to work. It's it's working, but what you don't realize is like, No, you're just plugging into you're a cog and 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 a gear of a bigger gear of an even bigger gear of New York City.
That's what you got to do, though. You get big in your hometown.
Right.
And then you move to a bigger city and you start over pretty
and
much.
And you fail. And you're back to square one or two. And you have to. So my brother is moving to Los Angeles soon. And that's my advice to him all the time. He's my younger brother. He's a genius. He's an actual genius. I'm sort of just like loud. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? My brother's an actual creative genius. And I tell him, man, you got to go and eat shit. Like you need to experience crippling failure so that you know what you want and so that you can perfect your vision. I think it's important to go like, why didn't this work or what worked about this? And I think Vine was a combination of timing, buzz, because it was social media practically didn't exist. There wasn't video social media. There wasn't content like that. It didn't exist.
Not short content. Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, you're saying like it kind of like started YouTube. That culture.
I think we rode a wave in, and now we've all settled on our own shores of our own distinct islands.
I like that.
And I think that now it's my turn to really work harder than ever before to sort of deliver my truth to my island, my people. Like I don't think that I don't think that it was that it was false. I don't think that Vine was not real, but I think that it was a massive wave that was bigger than all of us could ever be. That we just sort of kind of whoa, we're cruising on this, we're surfing on this.
Yeah.
And then it everything kind of ebbs and crashes, and you know that's what happens. Mm-hmm. But now it's cool because I could see clearly. Like, don't you feel that you have bullshit radar now? Like vision, you have a perspective that, I mean, how old are you,
Brandon? 24.
You're 24.
Yeah.
Look at the perspective you have that your friends who don't do this shit that we do, like, think of, you've been on the inside. You've gotten to see that it's...
Perspective or bitterness. It might be kind of both.
Maybe. Sure. But, yeah, you've gotten to see. And I've gotten to see what matters. It prioritized me.
Yeah.
What matters to me is... getting my art out there. That's all that matters. That's all Vine was, really.
I feel like maybe, Brandon, you haven't experienced... You have, to a degree. But you've maintained popularity.
Mm.
And you haven't...
No. I mean, are you saying I haven't experienced that low?
All of a sudden, I was down 4 million followers, and I had literally a fraction of the audience I had.
I lost 6 million and I lost five. Yeah. And it's like, and then I have like on Instagram, like, sure, I think I had 500K, but that, like you said, that's a fraction. I had a fraction.
Yeah.
And I didn't pay attention to Instagram, and all that was dead anyways. And then all my Twitter, everything was dead.
But you still
YouTube was dead.
He had to revive it. I get what you're saying. He had to revive it in the same way that we did by reinventing his work.
I've been through there. I'm just saying I have been. All right, low.
I wasn't done yet.
All right, go ahead. Sorry.
You have maintained popularity and relevancy. Like you never hit like, who is this guy? Because you're always appearing in vlogs and stuff.
Well, no, I have. I did.
Yeah?
I hit totally for like a solid 6 months.
Yeah.
And then...
was that directly after Vine?
Yeah. It was after it shut down. I did that for like 6 months. And I took that time to like do a lot of writing.
Did we start this podcast a year after Vine?
Maybe. I don't remember. I think so. We started in 2017, okay. I think.
Maybe I just didn't see you that much that year. All right, my bad. All right, fine. Well, you've had the downs.
Yeah.
You have downs.
This is a perfect... Actually, this is a perfect segue. It's all perception.
Yeah.
Everything is perception. You only perceive that because he didn't go out there and say, hey, guys, I failed. It's over.
I think
it's all about...
Good move.
I'm a magician. Like, that's my background, as I like magic.
Really?
Yeah, I like magic. Before music, I like magic. So music is an illusion in a way, because it's like piecing together something secretly to make something that people only know as this. It's a show.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of magic to perception and allowing people to draw their own conclusions as opposed to handing it or spoon-feeding it to them. I don't want to manipulate people, but I also don't want to tell people all of the inner goings on of my mind all the time. I sometimes want to put it into art, because my record, this record that we're working on, or that we just wrapped an EP. This EP is about, it's called Not Funny, and it's about how I felt. You know, that's all people said on Vine. That was the number one negative comment that I always got, was not funny. It was just easy for people to comment, well, not funny.
When
not
you're
funny.
Dealing with comedy, it's either you get, oh, this is really hilarious, or it's not funny.
Right.
They're not going to pick it apart like in an intricate
way.
Exactly.
And so I said, it's a perfect title for this record, because I'm serious. This is my art. This is my soul in a way. You know, this is real to me. It's not funny.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved that. I loved that I was branded that by these detractors or these people who were...
I like that.
These eggs, these anonymous eggs.
And so what I see a lot on social media, I see a lot of...
I live for this shit, though. I live for falling down. Yeah. I want to fall down. so that I have something to write about. Otherwise, I'm useless.
Mm. Yeah, if you get too successful, then the stuff that you make starts to you're feeding or you're pulling away from only success, and it's gonna your stuff's gonna feel
it's a
like,
shallow pool.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Totally. It totally is. So it's good,
and it'll make you sad too, because the key to gaining happiness is solving problems. Really, that's totally. Like really what fulfills us as humans.
We want problems to solve in a way. Right. Yeah.
So I think that's why Anthony Bourdain checked out, because he had no problems for like, he had everything. This is what I talked about with my licensed therapist. So I got her advice.
That was a real hard one for a lot of people.
She was Bourdain. That's what happened. He had everything and he had nothing to look, nothing to solve.
I don't feel that that's what it is. But then again, I don't know. And I wasn't in the room with him when he took his life.
Well, I was,
and I helped him. Jesus.
But I do though. Look at the guy, and I look at him in a way that I'm like, I think it was all there. It was all there for us to perceive and take for what we wanted. But it was all there. I think.
What do you mean it was all there?
I think that he was with his work and his narrative. He was mapping out his turmoil. Yeah. And I think that it was a lot of people just watch stuff while they're eating dinner, like, oh, this is great. We should get pho. I like Vietnamese food. But I think that below it, just like with anyone else that, I mean, God, people go, Chester Bennington, isn't that crazy? He killed himself? No!
Right.
Have you listened to the songs?
Yeah.
I don't know why they still play it in grocery stores. Now it's really disturbing to listen to.
You hear Linkin Park in grocery stores.
Yeah.
My dude, you're shopping at some rock and roll grocery stores. I hear Muzak just old lady music. Where are you shopping, Brandon?
Well, I mean, what I meant by grocery stores was 7-Eleven. That's a grocery store.
That's
to me.
Your grocery store.
Yeah. Not
me
not,
too. Me too, actually. Wait, let's really? Be real. Yeah. Yeah. Like 7-Eleven is probably it's my one stop shop for, you know, I get like an Arizona iced tea and a microwavable pizza pocket dinner.
Yeah.
I worked at 7-Eleven once. .. 7-Eleven is an inside job. Hey!
It's too early for me to even.
So when's your live show? When's the live show happening again?
Tour?
Yeah, please tell me the tour dates. I'm really fucking interested in going now that you said that great zinger. Good God.
I'm done.
All right, so wait, hold on. What were we just talking
about?
You're talking about the
Bourdain and, you know.
Yeah, Bourdain.
And also how you need problems to solve in order to maintain some happiness, you know?
Yes, Bourdain. My theory is that he got sad because he had no problems to solve.
And I disagree with you. I just disagree on that, but that's okay.
I mean, there's definitely more factors. He had darkness, like past drug addictions. He drank a lot, smoked a lot.
I think that he had a dark passenger riding shotgun with him at all times.
Yeah.
And he I think that artists, creative people who are literally make a career out of vulnerability are constantly aware of the presence of that darkness and dance with it all the time.
I like that.
I that's what I feel. And people who work, typing on computers in office jobs, they are so far removed from having to think about their inner monologue.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. And he actually had to think of it every day to work.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah. Mm. I'm not saying he ran out of problems and he was like, well, I'm done.
I feel you.
I think he had darkness. Definitely, like, I think the three of us do. We just got some darkness in us.
Not me.
I think what Nick's saying is right, but also suicide can be something that happens very quickly. Like you can be struggling with it like for years, and then one day you're like, all right, today's the day, and then it's done for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So
it
was probably just like he was struggling with it for a long time, and then he's like, okay, well, for today, sure. No longer gonna do this.
I'm tired.
Yeah, I'm tired today, right now. It's like it's like wanting like tacos. It's like, oh, I want a taco right now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna get a taco. He's like, all right, I'm gonna kill myself because can't deal with this anymore.
Right. Yeah.
So it just happened. It's a shame because if he just said like, I'm gonna keep going for a little bit longer, he probably would have maybe happened. No, that's a shame.
But he might have been like, why am I still so sad? I have everything. If I have everything and I'm still sad, there's no hope for me. I'm checking out.
Right.
What I'm saying
that's what I'm saying.
I
what
feel
I'm saying
you.
Is he struggled with that for years and years and years. And then one day he was like, done with this.
Right.
Bam.
Yeah.
And I think he struggled before success. Then he was like, but wait, now I'm successful and I'm still sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's wow. I mean, this got dark, but I mean, why not go there? I guess that's life. I think that's any friends I've lost from suicide. You know, it seems out of nowhere, but I don't know what the fuck was going on in that split second, that hair trigger decision, like that moment. Like, you don't. It's because, like he said, it is like getting tacos. It's like I want tacos.
Yeah,
that's it.
Let's do this now.
Let's go get tacos.
And it's not always like that. When I was suicidal a year ago, I was thinking for months and months about it. It wasn't like ordering tacos. It was like, I want tacos always.
Okay.
I want to be dead.
And then you're finally like, let's get tacos. You wanted tacos for 3 months, and then you got tacos.
No,
or you're about to get tacos.
I wanted tacos for 3 months, and then I said, I need to call the anti-taco store, which is my therapist.
Yeah, totally.
And it was like, please.
Going to the therapist was my, I didn't mean to cut you off, but my God, I love going to the therapist.
Me too.
Love going to talk to my shrink.
Have you gone yet, Brandon?
Not yet, no. They gave me a checkup for my brain stuff. Yeah. They're just like, oh, are you this? Are you that? Are you this? All right, see you in 3 months.
They're like, all right, well, you're too far gone. Order a taco.
Basically.
There you go. That's the United that's mental health in the United States. Yeah. Like, good luck, man. Good luck for the next quarter of a year. God bless
you. Hope we gave you some hope there.
Hope you got enough hope for the three
months, and then you'll come back.
We've confirmed you need immediate help, so we will see you in 3 months.
And my therapist deals with, this sounds weird, but I tell people, you can pick a therapist who you think will get it.
Yeah.
Because some people get turned off because they're not speaking your language. That particular shrink doesn't know your head. They might deal with certain types of people. So my therapist was someone who worked with creatives, who worked with artists, who was like, I know what it's like to be self-centered and in your head all day, coming up with bullshit ideas.
It's like my therapist too. I reached
out. It's like an LA therapist thing, probably. You know what I mean?
I reached out to my comedian friends. I was like, who's your therapist? Does she work with the comedians?
He's like, I can't hear you, man. What's? Are you crying?
Are you coming? Are you crying? What are you doing?
What are you doing? Both?
I don't know. It feels similar. They both feel good. One thing I've done in the world of art, in quotes, I kind of don't like saying art or calling myself an artist.
Okay.
I feel like I should get over that. I am an artist, goddammit.
Well, I mean, if you
comedy artist,
if you create things, you are.
Mm. God, it feels douchey.
I have a kind of an opinion on that too, where I got into a fight with you don't remember King Daddy from
yeah,
Bun?
Yeah.
I tweeted out that I don't like the word. I don't like the word art. I don't know why. I just don't. Yeah, yeah. Because I always equate art to paintings and that just very simplistic, like, oh, we're going to go to an art show where we're going to see art like a sculpture or a painting.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to, and and my mindset back then was like, oh, well, music, movies, all that stuff. Like, that's what that is. It's movies and music and all this stuff. But then I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's just a creation. It's just kind of all art.
So what was your argument with King Daddy?
King Daddy was just saying,
just like, please don't call yourself Daddy.
Like, you're 50 years old, you still follow me, and you still call yourself Daddy. No, he was like, just said I didn't know what I was talking about, and I was young. And that's not a good argument to present. Just like, I know more than you, but I'm not going to say how or why. Yeah.
And I've had opposite arguments with people where I've seen people saying, look at this new, you know, those selfie museums now where they set up, like, they're like pop-up museums where you go and it's like the ice cream museum and you take selfies, and the whole point of it is to photograph yourself in these environments and post it on social media. And yes, it's sort of a corporate hijacking of the gallery circuit and whatever. But, you know, I saw someone a year ago or whatever just saying, like, this isn't art. There's nothing of art about this. And I said, the fact that we're even asking if it is why it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's art. Art is a question. It's not a solution or an answer. Mm-hmm. It's wow. Is this some? I don't know what. I can't put my finger on this. This might be art.
Yeah, yeah.
Art is everything. I think that you can elevate everything you do to art. I think that if you pick bananas, there's an art to that. Mm-hmm. I think that if you make chairs, you're not just a chair maker. You could be an artist if you elevate it to that level.
The unfortunate thing with that mindset,
put your soul into it.
A lot of people will take that mindset and be like, "Well, now I'm going to be a pretentious asshole because everything I do is art."
Yeah,
so it's tough.
Totally, but the world, you have to let the world destroy them. It's not your job to do that. It's the world's job to go, we don't like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not your job as a person. Well, it could be, but
I don't do that. But.
Being critical of art, I have found is just a it's a dead end. It's or being critiquing it in any way, it's a dead end. And all that matters really is the output of it, and then that's it.
And that's where a lot of us influencer kids, I think, lose sight of what we really want to do. Like with Vine, when Vine first started, I was making stuff that I thought was funny. Purely, and I'd get comments like, "Do another Jay-Z Vine tomorrow," right. And in my head, I'd be like, "Fuck you! I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want."
You know what, Mike? I used to say to people, I used to say when people would say like, "Hey, man, can you just do?" They would give me like a laundry list of things they want to see me make, and I would comment back all the time, and I still do on Instagram to this day. I say, "Sure, can you come help me?" Come help me. Come help produce this.
Yeah, yeah.
And come to go to Party City, USA with me. And help me buy the $89 in props that I need to make this.
Right, right. Mm. And that
and come write with me. I actually got into your comments recently and defended you.
About what?
Someone said, "Fuck this, it's a repost."
Oh yeah.
And I said, "Well, why don't you come and help Brandon conceptualize content for the next month and be his assistant and his writing partner on this stuff, and then you know, because they don't know how much time and work goes into even making a fucking Instagram post. And it seems like it comes out of nowhere to people.
One thing Brendan has been great at is never allowing trends to like manipulate your posts.
Yeah, man, you're not guided by that. Yeah, you seem to be free of that.
And that's what creates the best art, making it from the inside out as opposed to the outside in, where like
totally.
Towards the end of Vine, I was like, all right, fuck, I need to be relevant. All right, what song's popular right now? All right, I should try to incorporate this song. Oh, yeah. Shit, what's trending? What can I say that's trending? I wasn't that bad. I
get it, though.
But those are dated in a week. That's the problem with that stuff, is when you do trendy stuff, it's just like all that stuff's like, it's not funny in 2 weeks.
Right,
if you do something that's like more... I don't know. I don't want to say the word timeless, but if you do something that's just more of a universal feeling as opposed to something that's being happening, then oh, you can listen to that in 20 years. Even if it's a song, it's like, oh, I can listen to
My
that.
My God, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
You need to do stuff like that. But I'm not saying you can't make trendy whatever it is, because I do think trendy stuff is funny.
Yeah.
But I, along with everybody else, after a week, I'm just like, I don't want to watch this again.
You know who has to work harder than all of us?
No.
Chris Melberger. Because Melberger is a commentator.
Yeah.
And he makes memes and he makes moments. And he has his genius is his ability to observe things that are happening right now and turn it around. His turnaround time is minutes on things. Ugh. He is a constant commentator and rearranger of media, and I think he's a genius at it. He has to keep up way more than I do.
Yeah, that sucks.
So so in a way, I'm like, my God, I could never put out the amount of work that he puts out. He'll have a brilliant Coachella parody poster done before Coachella even puts out their poster.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? That's its own genre of comedy, and it's incredible. Yeah. I don't have that patience I don't have that work ethic, I think, to constantly commentate.
That's
his genius.
It's like the Daily Show.
It is like the Daily Show. It's every day you have to be on your toes.
Yeah.
And that
paying attention deeply, critically.
Totally.
And that is good art, because they're making Chris does that because he loves doing it.
It's clearly not.
But there's a lot of YouTubers who will read their comments and be like, oh, they don't want to see me doing this. Or like
reading
comments from the outside and then adjusting your content because of the outside world. That'll make you sad. That makes me sad.
But would it ruin the show if I urinate real quick?
No.
No, go urinate real quick.
Let's pause. Yeah, so if I make content that I don't, that I'm doing it because of a trend or something, or if it's not because I want to do it, it'll make me very sad. Just like every job I've ever had, if I didn't love it, I become extremely depressed. I consider it a weakness.
Well, it's the people that you're talking about that read the comments and go like, they read them in the comments, go, you should do this. And they go, oh, I guess I should do that. What you need to understand is that a lot of people on YouTube and social media in general, their audience is their boss.
Yeah.
It's like they're at a job and like they want to stay working.
And I think that'll create bad shit.
Yeah, that's the opposite of art.
Yeah,
I know.
That's what I'm saying.
It's the opposite.
It is, but they're, you know, they got to do whatever they got to do to make money.
Do they, or do you think that you can be revolutionary in that position? Do you think that
you
can?
It's hard to ride that line, especially if you're on social media and YouTube, because a lot of people don't want heavy shit on there. They want very like vanilla,
light.
Just to help them get through their day, because it's social media, everyone's on it. It's not like when we go to a movie theater that's playing some weird movie from, I don't know, whatever, some indie film. Sure. And like we go there knowing this is probably going to be something a little bit more introspective, and so we know what we're getting in for.
Sure.
But social media in and of itself, to most people, is lighthearted, and it's
escapism.
It's escapism. It's totally escapism. And you... if you get like more introspective and deep, quote unquote, on there, then people are going to be like, I don't want to watch this shit.
Sure.
I don't know.
So a lot of YouTubers are being inauthentic to themselves and what they want to do. Sure, it might keep their business going, but I think in the long term, it's going to make them depressed.
Well, I'm not saying they're not horribly depressed. I'm saying that they're doing it for a reason. They're doing it because that's their... It's like when I worked at Subway, if I didn't... what is his name? Carlos? I forgot his fucking name already, but... I hated that guy.
Sorry, Carlos.
But if I didn't make sandwiches quick enough, Carlos would have fired me.
Right.
And he said, make sandwiches quicker. What am I going to say? No, fuck you, Carlos. No, I'm working for Carlos.
Right.
So I need to do these things.
Did you love that? Did you like that job? Did it make you happy?
No, not at all. I hated it. Are you kidding? It was the worst thing I ever did.
Well, I'm saying that these YouTubers who are doing shit just for their audience, it's not sustainable. They're going to end up depressed, and then their business is going to fail.
Well, and also their fans are going to start to see through it.
Yeah.
People aren't dumb. Yeah. We think even young kids who are on social media watching YouTube, they're not dumb. I think people can see pandering from a mile away now.
Yeah.
It's not 2013 anymore. It's not like we haven't had years to see through it.
Right.
I think that when I said it's the opposite of art, I mean that, because art is a guy, a girl, whatever, in a room by themselves, purging whatever it is onto the canvas, onto the screen, onto a video, whatever the fuck your medium is.
Mm. And then it ends there.
It ends there. It's not a back and forth dialogue of hey, do you guys think I should make sadder songs? Like and comment. Let me know in the comments if I should if I should change my hair today. Because then the art of your personality, of your individualism dies. It dies right there.
And that's why I haven't posted on Instagram in like 2 months, I think, because I was making videos and I didn't like them.
Right.
And I was doing it. I was like, well, this is what people want from me. Let me go out, make some wacky video. I'm going to put on a wig. I can get to a place where I love doing that, but right now I'm not there.
Man, let me
tell
you.
So I stopped posting.
Let's get real. And money is ugly and gross to talk about, but we need this to preface this, what I'm about to say. There was a period where I'm sure we've all been in the insanity of Vine and social media, where I had a couple of bucks in the bank. So I was able to go, fuck this. I'm going to self-sabotage on purpose. I'm going to make videos that I think that I like, that I kind of know won't be received well.
Mm-hmm.
And then that breaks you free of because you don't feel the shackles until you try to move.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're standing in place, you don't know that you're shackled. But then as soon as you start to break out of that, you go, oh my God, I'm in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So oh my God, there's something so beautiful and cathartic about just going, I don't care.
Right.
I'm having a horrible day or a wonderful day today, and this is what I want to say. And I'm gloriously me. There's a freedom in that. It's beautiful.
Totally.
And I actually like watching people go away because they were never meant to be on the ride. Like, I don't want people to falsely subscribe to what they think I am. I want to be able to change it up at any given time based on how I feel.
And that's what most influencers would definitely not do.
Right, because they have every video is the rent for the year for their house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Their mansion, their rented mansion that they live 5-10 people in at a time that they that they make their videos in. Like, it's in funny, it's like buy a car to drive to work to pay for the car.
Yeah.
It's the same. Why are we doing this? My God, that's why I couldn't collaborate with anybody. Like, people were like, hey man, when you're out in LA, I was like, no, I can't because I can't lie. I can't do it. And I wish I could. I would have been more, quote, successful for sure.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tiffany Haddish recently bombed in Vegas.
Right.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah. I read about it.
Speaking about self-sabotage, I think that was her self-sabotaging because she had all the success. And I'll make it about me so I'm not talking shit about somebody else. I self-sabotage sometimes. You even text me, it's like, dude, you're so punk rock. Like, you're so self-destructive. It's so punk rock. When you sent me that, I was like, all right, yeah, it's punk rock.
I think it's punk rock to say exactly what you're feeling and to, you know, not hurt anyone.
But I think sometimes, to, like, even with me physically, sometimes I'll drink too much because I'll be like, fuck it, it's life. Life is hard.
Right.
Get fucked up. I think really what's happening there is I don't really like myself. I don't feel worthy of love.
Sure.
That's why I have such low self-worth. It's because shit that's happened in the past. I'm like, all right, yeah, I'm a loser. I'm a fuck up. So
sure.
If I get success, it's like, why am I successful? I'm a fuck up. So I'll post this weird tweet about politics.
Sure. I feel you. Like, but I feel it. It's just it's a prison to cater. It's just a prison to cater.
Yeah.
To constantly cater, because then it's in it, your catering is indifferent to your reality.
Right.
Mm. It's unmoving. So it's to cater to people constantly around the clock means that I can't express how I feel. And if I can't express how I feel, I have no interest in doing anything. Yeah, I will get a job anywhere down the street. I tell people all the time, I don't care. Money is paper. It really is. It comes and goes. Like, I've been incredibly broke. I've survived it though. So I've seen it. Mm-hmm. It's good to see that because the worst of the worst is not as bad as you think.
Right.
It really isn't. You can live in your car for a little bit. Now that I have a child, I can't.
Right.
So yeah. I have different priorities now.
Yeah.
Priorities that probably are more exclusive to me being successful or more aligned with having to be financially successful. But at the end of the day, I don't think that any of the three of us here can find true success and happiness without being true to ourselves.
Mm. I agree.
I really feel that.
Yeah. I mean, I going to your to that point, I think a lot of kids who are on social media right now, those kids that live in those houses that you're talking about, those mansions, and they're all on YouTube and they're all in those mansions paying their own part of the rent to collaborate and then for make more money.
Yes.
I really feel like what they're chasing is a feeling of that feeling of success, and in their eyes that equates to like, okay, we're going to go to Nobu and then we're going to eat and then we're going to go, okay, then what are we going to do after Nobu? Oh, we're going to go here and then eat.
And
then we're going to go to this bar and drink
and
then we're going to go there and eat. And all these places are extremely expensive.
Right.
But it's you're working so hard to eat at a place that's a little bit nicer than Panda Express. You're working so hard to drink at a place that's a little bit nicer than the shitty bar down the street. It's a little bit nicer.
Right.
And I was literally with these people like 4 days ago. I went with a friend of mine to hang out with these girls, and that's what they were doing. These are all really wealthy girls who all do something, I don't know, on Instagram.
Sure.
And that's what we did. Was we went from one place and then, okay, now let's go to this place.
Why?
Okay, now
wait, because they wanted to post about it?
No, they were just doing, that's just what their day was.
And they weren't posting?
No, they were just, that was
their
day.
That's just the lifestyle.
That's just the lifestyle. Okay, yeah. And what I'm saying is that they post and they make shit to make money to fund that lifestyle. But then I look at that lifestyle and I'm like, what's happening?
Does anybody stop? Do you think that anybody ever stops and deeply questions what they're doing?
Totally. I think they do. And I think that's why they have breakdowns.
Okay.
Lot of these girls, and that's not just girls, it's guys too.
Yeah.
A lot of these people just have, they have this lifestyle for like 10 years and then they just go like, you know, what the fuck am I doing? What the fuck have I been doing my whole life? And especially, have you ever seen Blue Jasmine?
Yeah. A movie?
Yeah, really. It's Woody Allen movie. Not the best name to be attached to anymore, but it was a Woody Allen movie. It was really good.
Is it with Timberlake's wife? What's her name?
Alba?
No, I forgot the lady that's in it. Was it her name? I forgot.
I haven't seen it.
It's about a really wealthy woman that goes that her husband gets charged with like fraud or something and she loses all of her wealth.
Okay.
And it's about her dealing with losing all of her wealth. And I don't want to spoil it, but towards the end of the movie, there's this really, actually it's the last scene. This is just really like haunting like shit. Visual of this woman who's hugely wealthy and now basically has nothing.
Wow.
And I think that most people who have that lifestyle end up like that because there's not much. Mm-hmm. There's very immediate happiness that you get from a wealthy, successful, quote unquote lifestyle, but it's immediate. It's short lived. It's like a drug.
What is the then? Okay, I'm asking you personally now. Then what is the relatability for people? What does a kid who has to walk to school because they cut the busing program at this school in Boise, Idaho? What does he know? What does he know? What does he pull out of those videos of people dancing around?
That's what he wants.
That's what he wants.
And it's that, and it's a feeling of it's the same reason.
How can
why
those
people,
kids feel anything out of the at watching those videos? How do they feel that
they feel
any
FOMO.
Representation that
it's the same? It's what they want, and it's also this feeling of like power in a way. Because I feel like a lot of music nowadays, I listen to like what I see when people have their windows rolled down. They're listening to like really like hard hip hop. And it's always like, I fucked your bitch. I went to the club and they're like driving to the gym. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they want to feel that power because they have so little power
it's
in their
empowerment.
Lives.
Okay.
And they want to feel that like that rush of like, yeah, I fucked your bitch. I'm going to the club. Even though they're riding their 9-to-5 job at Subway.
It's, you know what I mean? It's an exploitation of FOMO, the fear of missing out. So
totally.
You show an awesome life. The kid in Idaho is like, oh, I want that. Oh, give me another video.
There's a name for it. It's called like life porn or something.
Yeah,
where,
it's really.
Isn't that what it's called?
It's like, reality television at the end of the day. I mean,
it's reality TV.
It's that's what all of YouTube is now, and that's okay. But the problem is that a lot of kids, like I think when we watched reality television, we went, oh my God, this is so crazy. Look how like it was, it's kind of mean, but it was like, look at how crazy these people are, like Jersey Shore.
Look at their fucked up life.
Yeah,
this is crazy.
It wasn't the best like way to watch to be entertained, but that's how we got entertained by those shows. But now it's like the kids watch it and they go, okay, I want to get that.
Yeah.
And kids go on YouTube now and they make videos to get that, to get into that big mansion with four other YouTubers to make money, to pay for food, to eat it, shit, and do the same thing over and over again. And it's like, well, what kind of goal is that?
And meanwhile, the people they're watching, these influencers, a lot of them, surprise, they're miserable. And that's not actually their real life.
So you know when people are like, okay, guys, I'm finally going to be real, and they put out a video that's like, this is it. This
all
is
lowercase. Right. All lowercase.
Right. All lowercase.
All lowercase title.
I got to, we have to have a talk, or like, I have to get this off my chest.
My truth.
Is that real?
I don't know.
Or is that a perfectly presented, manicured, hyphenated version of how they really feel?
I don't know.
Because honest to God, if this is reality, if that's what they're positioning this as reality and their lives and their truth, there's something that's deceitful about that. That these kids don't see the back end of that. They don't see the tears. They don't see that pain.
That's social media, man. That's why I fucking hate it. It's not real.
Well, and that's why we're working towards, you know,
something real.
Well, I don't even know what real means in this world of, you know, I went to a music convention yesterday and I watched I saw a guy hitting air drums. There was nothing there. There was no drums, but there were sounds being made. And it was, you know, they're presenting all this new technology at this convention, all this new music related technology. And this guy is playing drums that aren't there, but it's somehow his movement is playing the drums. And I was like, man, we don't even have, people aren't even playing instruments anymore. This isn't we've become so self-alienated. I guess what I'm getting at is don't you think that there's something still that needs, like, I think people still need to learn trades. I think that we still need to be a community in person. I think that we need to shake each other's hands. Mm-hmm. I think people need to see your face when you talk to them.
Well, that's happening way gradually, less and less.
I think that, like, I love getting coffee with you. I love sitting down and going like, hey man, like, I'm nervous about this tour, and you know, I
then I'll be like, wait,
I wrote a new song.
Dude, post this on Facebook. You'll get more likes. Mm-hmm. Save it.
See, that's what it is. Mm. So I want to live free of the responsibility of compartmentalizing or making content out of every aspect of my life. I want to work on a record. I think there are elevated things in now. I'm looking at, like, I wrote a book in 2014, 15. That to me, God bless you, that to me was real to me. I wrote it for 6-7 months. I worked on the art with my father, and my father made sets and puppets and photographed them. And we made this beautiful book that's printed on paper that you could buy at a store. I don't have to commit as much. I could wear my pajamas and sit in my house and do something. I mean, it's not, there's no, the commitment level's not there. I want to be absorbed. I want to be consumed by what I'm doing. I want it to take longer. I want to make a film. I want to write a book. I want to make a record because I think people feel that stuff. I think there's a need for it.
You know, yeah, that's funny because
everything's so short form.
Yeah, it is short form, and it's what I've noticed is I do these things on YouTube called The Conversation With, and they get pretty decent amount of views, and those take a day to make. Those don't really take much effort. I mean, I like them and I enjoy doing them, but they don't take much effort. There's not a creative like fulfillment that you get from them. But I also made short films that take a lot of time. They take like, you know, a few days to write, then like a week to film, then like a week to edit.
Sure.
It's a long process and I enjoy it a lot. But then you post it and it doesn't get as many views, but the comments are way higher. Because people are like so much more emotionally like fulfilled and invested by this thing.
Yes. Those are your hardcore fans right there.
Well, yeah, but also like I'll get like 1,000 comments on something that has like 50,000 views, and then something that has like the conversation video that has like 500,000 views, I'll get like, I don't know, like 500 comments because people are more, I think people, when they realize that there's an actual like person than like a soul and like a something behind the thing that they're watching. They're gravitate towards that. They can spot. Mm-hmm. You say people can spot bullshit. People can spot
authenticity
as well. They can spot that too. So it's and not just authenticity, but like a passion. They can spot passion.
Yes,
and true passion. They can spot that. So I think. Yeah, I don't know.
I like killing myself making things. I love going through the rigmarole. I love the leaps and bounds. I like the mini failures, the mini successes that happen 20 times a day when you're in the studio making a record. Mm. I like being forced to be in a room for 12 hours recording at a time. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
I feel fulfilled, man. Yeah. When it's done, I feel fulfilled.
Oh yeah, I love the process of making something. Not because I'm like, ooh, yes, I'm making something beautiful. I think really why I love it is because it's meditative, and I'm not thinking of anything else when I'm doing it.
Oh, yeah, you're in it.
Yeah.
You're in it. Instagram video for me, I'm not really in it. I don't have to take, it's not much time. It's less than a day, you know. It's not like even what he does for these conversational videos.
Right now I'm tired of making one-minute videos, so I stopped because it was making me sad. But I think that's a smart move. Oh, my manager's like, dude. Post once a week at least. I was like, yeah, but it's making me miserable.
What do you guys think is the biggest trend right now? Not just on social media, but worldwide.
Outrage.
Young people and beyond.
Outrage and being offended.
Okay.
Being offended.
I think it's with young. You're saying with young people?
Yeah.
It's being an entrepreneur, in quotes.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it is.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
I was actually ready to say it. This is almost
Gary V.
baiting for you to commentate on this because everybody is now a mogul.
Yeah.
Everyone has a massive business and everyone is.
Or they want a massive business,
right?
And every young person's favorite Scorsese film is Wolf of Wall Street,
right?
It's not Taxi Driver. It's not Goodfellas,
right?
It's Wolf of Wall Street. They'll say I love Wolf of Wall Street. Somebody that's like 20,
right?
And I go. Oh, that's awesome. Scorsese?
Right.
Then? And they're like, who's that?
Right.
I'm like, what do you mean? And then they're like, oh, I just like Wolf of Wall Street because it's, even though it's completely, it's a very typical rise and fall kind of story told through Wall Street instead of crime, which is technically still crime.
Sure.
They're young, and so they don't see that end part where everything goes to shit. They're more seeing this like this glamour of like, oh, I can do this because they see these guys in the movie that are like start from nothing and then they fucking build it up.
Right.
Same with Social Network. That's a lot of people's favorite movie because it's about a guy that started from nothing, really smart, and then he fucking made it and became a billionaire. But
he's a robot.
Yes. But the ending.
Right.
That's what I always go like, oh, so that's your favorite movie?
Right.
Why?
Because
of all this. And then I'm like, but like the end of it. Do you know what happens? how he betrays his friends and all this shit.
Spoiler alert.
I'm just saying,
guys.
It's like how people call themselves stans because of the Eminem song Stan.
Right.
And I'm like, do you know what that song's about and how it ends?
Do you know what it means?
Do you know what it means? What happens? Right. And it's like, I think, but yeah, going back to that, yeah, I think it is just being a mogul, like you said.
People these days lack patience. Like someone like, I started a business. Boom. That's good enough. I'm an entrepreneur now.
Right.
Yeah. That's as easy as you can call yourself an entrepreneur anytime you want.
Get that bread. That's what everyone says.
And college grads are like, all right, I'm an entrepreneur.
But is it?
Look. What the fuck? I'm an entrepreneur. Where's the money?
Isn't that wild that in real life, in face-to-face life, if you were to say, yeah, I have a business on, I'm in Wilshire, I'm a Cahuenga, I have a business here in LA. Cool. Can I come check it out? And that's where the lie would end. Because you'd be like, I don't have a storefront. I don't have a place of work.
Yeah.
But on social media, my God, if you take enough pictures and put enough cool, you know, overlay text and graphics, it's like, wow, this guy has his shit together. We should invest in him. It's hard to see that, to see the reality there sometimes.
So let's talk about Nicholas McAuliffe's
truth.
We're an hour in already. Let's talk about what you got going on, what we got going on.
Okay.
Nicholas McAuliffe and I are going on tour.
We are, man.
Doing what we love.
I'm blown away that you wanted to come on this.
I'm desperate for stage time, so
I think that. Well, I asked him. I mean, I asked you, and you didn't really even sit on it. You were like, "Yeah, let's do it."
Yeah,
I was like, "Is he okay? Has he thought this through?" This will be my first tour since Vine. First proper tour. You and I had performed together and done shows, and they were massively successful because we have a cool dual dynamic that really works.
But guess what? After those sold out shows with very pleased audience members, I wasn't happy with myself.
That's okay.
Because I was pandering to the audience. They want these characters.
New you, baby. New year, new you.
Yeah.
Seriously. I'm a different person than I was then. I thought that I had to cater to a certain, you know, or I had a, it was a precedence or a, there was, you know, pretense there, but now I don't feel that. I feel that the people who are coming to these relatively small capacity shows, you know, there's not a lot of tickets available. They're small shows purposefully so that I know, you know, these are the people who want to be there. If you're still with me, you know, riding with me in 2019, you're a McAuliffe fan. You're not someone that I have to convince to enjoy me. So that's why I think these will be special shows, because I know that everyone who's there gets it, and it's a family. And that's why I wanted you to be part of this. Now it's going to be a different vibe, man. These are not people coming because there's some Vine hype behind it. This is not a machine, and this is not a tour with money behind it. This is me and a small group of my friends, including you, getting in vans and going, not the shoes, but rather the vehicle. getting in vans and going and driving, booking the shows ourselves. These are secret shows.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if the audience here knows about that or
yeah, explain that.
Basically, you know, we wanted an extra level of excitement for these because you can do a show, anybody can do a show, and anybody can book, you know, Uncle Slappy's Fun House down the street, and anybody can play a rock club, you know, with enough if you have enough patience, you can get somebody to bite and be like, yeah, but they'll put you on a Tuesday night at opening for a band that's bad, and then you have to tell your fans, yeah, it's at this dirty rock club and it's really overpriced and it's not all ages, so sorry, like some people can't get in. So I didn't want to be in that position. I don't want to put my fans in that position. I don't. I wanted to control every aspect of it so that I can meet everybody. Is it one or A? I want to meet everybody who comes. They're small shows, so we can meet these people who want to meet me and want to, you know, if you want to have a conversation with me about jazz, I'd love to talk to you. If you want to talk about your day, I'd love to hear from you. I honestly, this is more of almost a selfish opportunity for me to get to have real face-to-face, you know, artistic dialogues in music form, comedy form, and meeting people as well. Mm-hmm. So these are secret shows, which means you go to the website to buy a ticket, which is nicholasmcauliffeisnotfunny.com. That's the website. all things considered. I mean, I maybe I'm funny.
You are funny.
I don't know. Thank you.
I loved your Vans joke.
It wasn't even a joke. It was a clarification. Thanks, man.
We're all going to get into Vans.
I think we're because we're sponsored by Vans. No. They're secret shows. So, which means that you buy a ticket, and like, let's say you're going to the San Diego show. You click on San Diego on the website, buy a ticket or tickets. You can also get my EP, which is not out yet to the world. The only way to listen to this EP actually before the rest of the world is to go to these shows, because you'll get a copy of the EP if you choose to get that package when you get the tickets. Tickets are cheap. They're $25. But the caveat, the catch is that you won't know where the venue is until 24 hours before the event. Mm-hmm. So you get an email.
But it'll be in that city.
It'll be in that city. So you'll know that I'm booking a ticket to go see Nicholas and Ryan in Sacramento, and you click purchase, and then 24 hours exactly before the show, you'll get an email that says, hey, here's the address, see you tonight. And so that means that people can't buy tickets, people can't walk up to the door because they won't know where the door is. Mm-hmm. These are only for people who bought them in advance, which I think is super cool, and so far people are responding pretty well. I actually was very nervous about, like, you know, there's a lot of trust in that. And like, you know, where is this show going to be? Like, is this going to be in a place I want to go? But we have very, very carefully, my team and I have handpicked offbeat, unique, special, wonderful places that you wouldn't normally see a band at. I can't give too much away, but these are not clubs. These are all interesting locations.
So what you're saying is I have some very difficult gigs ahead of me.
It's going to be really rough for you, bud. No, it's going to be,
it's going to be tough.
I think it's going to be the most exhilarating touring experience of both of our lives up to this point, because this is so DIY, which makes it scary, but less scary, because there's nobody going to be at the club going like, you know, hey man, you guys need to wrap this up. Let's wrap this show up. We are the promoter. We are the, you know,
and the tour.
We are the facilitators of fun.
And I'm on most of the dates.
You're on 5 out of the 9 dates.
And I will put all the dates and cities in the bio of this podcast.
Please.
But where are you heading? It goes from San Diego.
We kick it off in San Diego on Valentine's Day. Mm. So if you're a loser like me and you don't have a date, just kidding. I have a wife. And my wife and I do go on dates whenever we get a chance. But Valentine's Day, we could take it or leave it. We don't really, you know.
That's nice.
I've heard some people have messaged me and I've heard some funny stuff. You know, like, wow, perfect. I have no plans anyway. I'll see you there. I don't have a date for Valentine's Day. So if you don't have a date for Valentine's Day, see us in San Diego. See me in San Diego. You won't be on that show yet.
Right.
I'm doing that. And then L.A. on the 15th of February. Mm-hmm. And then we go to San Francisco.
And yep. I'll be there. That's when I join the tour.
Yep.
San Francisco, Sacramento, Portland, Seattle, Salt Lake City.
Right.
And that's where I finish. Las Vegas.
Yes. Your last show is in Salt Lake City. And then I do Las Vegas and then Phoenix.
Yep.
9 shows. I'm telling you, and if I may, can I just say tease one thing about the shows?
Sure.
You guys, another reason we're doing these ourselves is because it's a little production. Like this is my off Broadway moment. There's you know, beautiful. These shows are beautified in a Megalis way. They're visual experiences. You know, it's like you're gonna walk into this show and it's an environment.
Cool.
It's an experience. It's an audio visual experience.
Really?
And yes,
visual.
You know very little about this.
I know nothing about it.
It's I wanted to create an environment where people will be comfortable and intrigued at all points of the show. You're not going to walk in and it's going to be some cold, sterile rock club where some guy's like, hey, let me see your wrists. Here's a wristband. Right. It's none of that bullshit. It's, you know, these are all ages shows. Bring your family. I'm looking forward to meeting, you know, the people who have I'm getting emotional almost talking about this, but you know, man, it sucks being behind a phone all the time, being on my phone. Like that only goes so far. I get to actually, you know, see the people's faces who allowed me to even be there in the fucking first place.
Right.
This tour wouldn't be possible without those people.
I like it. The tour starts the first date, February 14th. Right? Valentine's Day?
Yes. Valentine's Day. San Diego.
Everybody listening, click the link in the bio or go to NicholasMegalisIsNotFunny.com if you want to see us both live.
I'm so excited, man.
Is that about it?
Yeah.
Yeah? Don't fucking look at me like that.
I'm sorry.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to riff with me.
No. The best thing to do is to just cave and admit defeat, and then everybody is now on my side because they're like, oh, Rye's a bully. Yeah. That's how I win him over.
That's brilliant. That's manipulative.
That's how I win him over.
All right. I think that was a good ending-ish.
I just want to say I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks for doing
I've been wanting to do this for a long time.
And also, let's close out this episode with Nick's new single, Telepathy.
Ooh. Yeah. You want me to say something about it?
Sure, yeah.
It's called Telepathy.
Oops.
It's the first single. It's the first single off my EP. The EP is called Not Funny. And it comes out in March, but people get a sneak preview of the record live on these February dates. Mm-hmm. And it's my first single in years. It's my first proper song in years. And I'm so incredibly anxious and excited about it. I'm very nervous about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's personal. You know, it's my art, Ryan.
And it's available on Spotify right now, right?
Yes, sir.
Fuck yeah. So check out on Spotify right the fuck now. Well, you're about to hear the song on this podcast, but also stream it on Spotify, and Nick will get a couple shekels.
Thank you, everyone. Listen to the song. Let me know what you think.
Couple of shekels, not shackles.
Let me know what you guys don't like about the song in the comments, and I'll change the song.
Say la vie to me. Well, it's easy to see that if 1 + 1 = 2, then 3 means Dave. I can be anything by your side. It's easy to breathe. I can feel everything when I go outside. I've got a hole inside of me. It's where I breathe. I even thought about me. I make no sense. It says to me that if I fell down, I would never bleed. Okay. I turned down university. Baby, believe me, I'll never leave. If we don't write what we want to see, I don't believe me. The tips of our pens and whoa, we can write anything. I don't mind if I'm R.L. Stein or Hemingway. I don't know if I'm alive or pretending to be a close to me. And you'll see that I make such sense. You said to me that
let's give a shout out to our $25 patrons. Desiree.
Desiree.
You're paying $25 a month for this personal shout out right now, meaning you're wealthy and we love that you have a trust fund. So thank you, Desiree. No, Desiree, thank you for being a $25 patron on patreon.com/I'm sorry, Dad. Can you say thanks, Desiree?
Thank you, Desiree. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Desiree. We appreciate it.
I've noticed people say the word appreciate two different ways.
How
Nick says appreciate.
Appreciate.
You say appreciate.
I'm
an appreciate kind of guy.
I appreciate it.
Appreciate.
Well, I appreciate your pronunciation of appreciation.
This is mind-blowing. You're right. I do say appreciate.
I appreciate. You appreciate.
Okay.
Both are correct.
Mm.
Well, next up, I really appreciate Ross Miller. $25 a month at Patreon. Thank you, Ross Miller.
Ross Miller, you're so killer.
That's pretty good.
We hope you like the podcasts and all of the filler that was in the comedy filler.
What Nick said, Ross.
Say his last name, too.
Miller. Ross Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Ross Miller, for listening to the podcast.
Steve Marshallek, $25 a month. Thank you for being a trust fund baby.
Thank you for being a trust fund baby, Steve Marshallek.
We love you, Steve Marshallek.
Can I get in on this? Can you guys shout me out?
Nick,
could you shout links? No, I mean, if I paid you $25 a month,
yeah,
would you shout out my website every month?
Yeah, we will do this for anybody. If anyone listening,
dude, this is
literally
amazing.
Anybody,
this anyone, is amazing.
Give us $25 a month, and we will shout out your business that doesn't exist.
And tons of people listen to this podcast. I mean, let's cut the shit. Like, a lot of people listen to this, so that's an amazing opportunity. Truly. Mm-hmm.
Truly is. Like, Desiree, Ross, Steve, if you have a business, we can even shout out your
Let's
Instagram
talk.
Handle. Email the podcast, imsorrydadpod@gmail.com. Only $25 patrons. Let us know your Instagram. We'll shout you out.
That's brilliant.
I'm happy to do that. Brandon will post all right, we're rambling. Thank you all to all
and
the patrons.
And for 25,000, Brandon will post a photo.
Yeah.
Just a photo.
I'm sorry, Dad.
I'm sorry, Dad.
I'm sorry, Dad.